You're listening to West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Earlene McMichael. Coming up, WMUK's Gordon Evans talks with University of Toronto professor Doris Bergen. The author of War and Genocide, A Concise History of the Holocaust, speaks tonight at Kalamazoo College. But first, we'll discuss another historical event, this one in the United States that marks its 25th anniversary next year. It's when in 1991, Anita Hill, a young law professor, sparked public awareness about sexual harassment in the workplace after her graphic testimony accusing then U.S. Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas of a long list of inappropriate behavior. Thomas had once been her supervisor. Anita Hill was both criticized and praised at the time. At its worst, there were death threats, and her university tried to get rid of her. Now, age 58, Hill mostly gets an altogether different reception. At an appearance in Kalamazoo earlier this week, the crowd gave her a standing ovation as she walked onto the stage to deliver a talk about gender violence as part of Western Michigan University's Raise Your Voice speaker series. Hill teaches social policy, law, and women's studies at Brandeis University in the Boston area. I had a chance to sit down with Hill immediately after she spoke for an exclusive interview on a broad range of topics. In the Boston Globe last year, you said that sexual harassment and assaults in the military and on college campuses shows that we can no longer wait for elected officials for solutions. You said it's time to start the conversation again. What did you mean by that?
Especially when we talk about sexual assault in the military, there had been proposals to change the system in the military that was before the Senate. They couldn't decide. They couldn't decide whether to remove the issues from the chain of command. And the assaults we know are real. They're dangerous, and they continue. And so we can't just simply assume that because they know about them that things are going to be done differently. We've got to make sure that we hold them accountable. And that means that if they don't respond appropriately, that we vote elsewhere.
Speaking of elected officials, over the weekend, big announcement. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announced her candidacy for the U.S. presidency. But putting aside whether or not you'd vote for her, what effect do you think having a woman in the White House in that kind of conversation that you're talking about that needs to be revisited about sexual harassment and other gender issues, in which areas, if any, do you envision progress being made at all? Do you think it's going to make a difference?
I think that it can make a difference. I think it depends on what the people she puts in place make as their priorities. And I hope what we won't get is an effort for us to say, put extra pressure on her to be neutral. And I think that has happened with our current president, who has been encouraged to be race neutral and not pay attention to race issues. So I'm hoping that we are beyond that, that we will not, if a woman is in the White House, whether it's Hillary Clinton or someone else, that we will not demand that she be gender neutral and that we attend to many of the gender issues that are ongoing and that are hampering all of us, the progress that we're all hoping to make.
I know in your book, Reimagining Equality, you outline the evolution of racial discrimination in the more sophisticated forms. It's gone from slavery to segregation to redlining to gender and racial bias in lending. But it seems that since your case in terms of, let's talk about sexual harassment in the workplace, while it has changed the conversation in terms of maybe people don't probably overtly do that like they used to, is it going into different forms in the workplace?
I think two things are happening. Uh-huh. One, I do think that it's been institutionalized, that it's been built into our evaluation systems. Mm. It's been built in ways gender discrimination and inequities are being built in ways that we're not accounting for. For example, when women are evaluated and told, oh, you must be softer, or you must be develop a way to be more collegial. And in some ways, we don't hold men accountable in the same ways. We're not telling men they should be softer. And so an evaluation process then is institutionalizing our bias. I think in those situations where we have heard that in some workplaces, women are excluded from activities, women are still in workplaces where men routinely talk about pornography and strip clubs. We are in situations where we know that there are cultures and climates that prevent women from being equal and making progress. And then you add on to that the way they get overlapped and built into evaluation structures. That's one thing that we're dealing with, things that are changing in the workplace that are keeping us from preventing discrimination and harassment. The other thing, and law professor Catherine McKinnon talks about this, is that procedurally, the rules are really limiting the way harassment is defined and who has responsibility for it. And so this goes back to some of the Supreme Court cases, fighting on two fronts. One, they institutionalize gender bias, and then on the courts that are, seem to be hardening to these claims through the processes and some of the standards that have been elevated in terms of proving sexual harassment.
We talk next about gender pay equity, starting off the conversation with a new approach being used by Ellen Pao, interim CEO of Reddit, a social networking and news website. Pao has banned salary negotiations from the hiring process at her company, saying men tend to be tougher negotiators. I asked Hill if she supports the move.
Well, I think one of the things that it is true that women are coming in at lower salaries. I'm not sure banning salary negotiations will do it. I think that in many cases, the higher pays are not necessarily even negotiated pays. We know from information that's gathered on unconscious bias that men are best awarded by their supervisors higher pay. If you're looking at resumes that are all the same, that ones that are men, even though the women may have the same training, the same attributes, the same experiences, the men and women evaluating those resumes award men more money than they do the same situated women. So I don't know that the negotiating, that all of the disparities come through negotiations.
What's going to help with pay equity?
I asked that question once to Senator Kennedy. He was at an event at Brandeis University, and I said, ask him two things. I said, the country assumes that we can't do anything about, or we haven't done anything about unemployment rates higher for black and brown men, and we haven't tackled the issue for women of pay equity. And he said to me, and I think this is true, that we have to have a Secretary of Labor whose top priority is eliminating pay disparity and whose top priority, or second, or somewhere on the same level, is their attention to the higher unemployment rate in communities of color. And so that has got to happen. It has to be the priority of an official who is appointed by a president who will back him.
Anita Hill often speaks with young girls and college students, keenly aware that they were not born during the time that she testified before the Senate Judiciary hearings. She wants to make sure that this generation is aware of sexual harassment. One way that she's doing that is through a documentary that was released last year. But on the horizon is a film by HBO on her life. She's not involved with this film, but it does star a very popular African-American actress, Kerry Washington, the star of hit TV drama Scandal. I was reading in the Hollywood Reporter, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but last month it was announced that an HBO film is coming out called Confirmation. And the Scandal actress, Kerry Washington, is supposed to be playing you. All right, do you know who Kerry Washington is?
It's kind of hard not to know who Kerry Washington is, isn't it?
And one, were you aware of this film, and are you going to be involved with it? And what do you think of her playing you?
Well, I was aware of it. And, of course, I'm more aware of it, mostly from the stories. You know, I'm interested in seeing how it comes out. Yeah, it's an important subject. And I grew up at a different time, but I teach young people. They watch Scandal. They'll watch Kerry Washington. They'll learn from the film if it's done right and it's done well. And HBO has a good reputation. And I'm excited to see where this can take another generation of viewers.
Speaking of this next generation, some of the issues that you talked about in your talk tonight is you were talking about cyberstalking and bullying and shaming in public places and things that are being done that is making victims want to be silent.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that. And is that something that concerns you?
It absolutely does concern me. I was fortunate that in 1991, we hardly had much email, but I got the negative messages in the forms of letters and phone calls. I think the threat that the internet offers is different in a way because there's a protection and an anonymity. You don't know where they're coming from, and you don't know how widespread the shaming and the name calling gets. You don't know who might be reading about you, reading things that are not true about you. So I think it is a growing problem. It's a different problem. I think it's especially a hard problem for young people who spend a lot of time and place a lot of credibility on social media. It defines in many ways their social lives. Mm-hmm. And I think it is a real threat. Some of the more vicious stuff that happens when women complain about it, women in the industries who are in the tech industry who complain, then get cyberbullied. Mm-hmm. I think it's a growing threat, and there's got to be some kind of recourse.
During your presentation, you talked a lot about, if I'm understanding correctly, that the handling of sexual assault complaints on college campuses, it seems like the burden of proof is moving toward, like, a criminal area?
Well, that's been an effort to say, a lot of people are saying, campuses shouldn't even be hearing these. Well, as a criminal matter, campuses shouldn't be hearing them. But as a civil rights matter, campuses have a responsibility to hear them. It doesn't remove the responsibility of the criminal justice system to address them.
What then would you want the consequences to be for those that are found to have committed these sexual assaults? You were referencing an individual who was said to write a letter of apology.
I think in the worst cases, there are different levels of sexual assault, but I think in the worst cases, people should be expelled. The community has to decide what their standards of behavior are. We expel students for cheating. We expel students for stealing other students' property. And sexual assault is certainly serious. It's an offense to the individual who is assaulted, but also to the community and the community standards. And it's a violation of rights.
And do you think, though, criminal charges should also be brought in certain cases?
Oh, absolutely. One is not the end of the criminal justice process. The criminal justice process should act in ways more responsibly than it has, because we know how difficult it is in a criminal justice system to get a prosecution for sexual assault.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time. And I am just so delighted to meet you.
Good to meet you. Well, thank you. And thanks for your question.
Been hearing from Anita Hill. Next year is the 25th anniversary of her testimony against U.S. Supreme Court Justice nominee Clarence Thomas that helped change laws and thinking regarding sexual harassment in the workplace. For more information about this story, visit our webpage at WMUK.org. For WMUK's West Southwest, I'm Earlene McMichael.